Our Falling Into Place series spotlights the important work of and fosters collaboration between not-for-profit organizations in our communities, allowing us all to fall into place. Falling Into Place is sponsored by the Seymour Fox Memorial Foundation, providing a helping hand to turn inspiration into accomplishment. See more possibilities, see more promise, see more progress. Joining us today is Tim Hathaway, Executive Director of Prevent Child Abuse New York. And it is a great pleasure to welcome Tim to Falling Into Place this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Well, let us talk about the services that you provide and give us a sense of what you're doing and where we are right now as far as your mission and where you're working. And let's start with that. How long has this organization been around?
So Prevent Child Abuse New York originated in the state in 1980, so we've been around for a number of years.
Yep.
And our work really is threefold. We're interested in really changing the narrative about issues related to abuse. Oftentimes people see this in some ways that seem maybe one-dimensional. So we really like to encourage a lot more public awareness about the issue, helping people understand that there are many sides to this issue and it's important to be informed. We also do a lot of training and development, professional development work for people across the state. And we also do policy and advocacy work across the state.
Which is the hardest of those?
Wow. You know, I think all of them are exciting places to be. And there are challenges and pleasures in each one of them. Obviously, when we start talking about work related to policy and helping people and communities and decision makers think about what can they do that really changes the landscape for children and families. There's a lot of challenge there and a lot of pieces that we want to work on. I think in many ways, helping people understand this issue better is perhaps among the most challenging. People are inundated with messages today, and we grow up with a lot of messages from our family and from our friends and from our community, and sometimes those run contrary to what we need to understand about child abuse.
So what are the misconceptions? This is going to be a two-part question.
Sure.
What are the misconceptions, and then what do we do to correct those misconceptions? But let us begin with, in getting that message out, and it's difficult, where do we go wrong, and where does the message get lost, do you believe?
Sure. So in terms of, and let's talk about sexual abuse prevention, because that's a hot topic right now. There's a lot going on in the media about that issue. So related to what happens for children who are in a spot where they've been victimized or abused by someone, one of the first things that I think sometimes we get wrong is we hesitate in believing that survivor. And so we always want people to think about what prompts a survivor to come forward with a heart-rending story about their experience. So believe survivors, I think, is one of the things that we always put forward. And again, there's a lot of messaging around that, but that's an important message. I think another thing is that a lot of times around sexual abuse, we kind of think about, well, the abuser is going to be that guy living in the basement, or you know, some you know, guy down by the van in the river. That's not really the case. That's not borne out in statistics. Most people, most children who are abused, most people who are sexually assaulted are assaulted by someone they know, a family member, an acquaintance of theirs. It's really a pretty small percentage that are victimized by somebody that they don't know or have never met.
I promise you, I'm not looking to make this at all political, but let me just ask you this question,
yeah.
Which is the situation that we're seeing in the Alabama Senate race, where you have women who are now in their 40s, 50s, who are recalling a situation that happened 40 years ago. And are now, obviously, it's in the news because the man is mm-hmm. running for Senate.
Mm-hmm.
But to come forward now, that is, from my understanding, is completely normal, right? I mean,
absolutely.
That follows a pattern of people coming forward much, much later.
Absolutely. And that's what we see so many times with victims of a variety of different crimes that have happened in secret is that it takes a while for them to be able to process that. And frankly, there are oftentimes issues of safety for these individuals. So, for instance, I spoke with a man who had been victimized by his dentist in a small town. And the dentist knew everybody, knew his family, knew law enforcement, knew the courts. That was a man of power in that community. That individual did not come forward until he knew that his family was free from harmful fallout from that individual coming back and attacking his family. So, and oftentimes that's one of the tools that perpetrators use, is they threaten people's families, they threaten people's livelihoods to keep people quiet, and it's effective, and that's why a lot of people end up waiting. There has been a bill, and Alabama's a really good case in point, where the legislature in those states, New York unfortunately is one of those states too, where if we could change the rules around what happens for statute of limitations on some of these crimes, it would really help perpetrators. So I don't want to politicize that either. But in New York State, Child Victims Act has been struggling through House and Senate for a long time. We'd love to see that pass.
Well, and by the way, I don't mind getting political. It's just, I, you know, if you're up for that, I'm good. I just, I didn't want to, you know, make that the focus. But again, I think we have an opportunity here because a lot of these topics are in the news and they're being discussed. So we talk about consent.
Right.
Can a child consent?
No, you know, when that, and that, I'm glad you asked that question because, you know, consent is clear and unambiguous agreement expressed outwardly through mutual understanding, and consent does not involve issues of manipulation or threat. And so when we think about the ability of a child, even kids that are 18, I've got sons that are 16, he's a great kid, but he's not ready to match wits with the adults in the world. He doesn't have the experience, he doesn't have the understanding, he doesn't have the resources to do that. And so to think that kids can consent around these kind of issues is absolutely wrong, and we need to put that myth to death.
And for the most part, we have laws that strengthen that, but you also have these really weird marriage laws that say, okay, the kids can be married with parental permission at 14 years old.
Right.
It's a strange situation.
Yeah, and
scenario.
And there are outliers still. New York State actually fixed this one last year. Governor Cuomo fixed that Child Marriage Act, which kind of raised that. Age. Other states still have these kind of lingering out there. I think those are places that we really need to shine a light and really talk about what is up when we're saying that, for instance, in Alabama, a 16-year-old child can make a decision to have consensual sex with a 30-year-old man. That's not consensual sex.
So what can we do to prevent it? What do we do? I know you have programs, you have trainings, you have campaigns. Mm-hmm. Give us an idea of what we can do to prevent it.
So, first and foremost, I say let's build stronger, healthy relationships with kids. And so what we know is that kids that are isolated, that feel like they're not connected well to adults, are vulnerable. So that's one thing that we do, is build strong relationships with kids. We need to talk more with kids about emotional health and about healthy sexuality. And sometimes sexuality is a taboo topic, and we worry about that as adults, and how do I do that? But that's a way that we immunize kids and protect kids, as well as build healthy, strong relationships with kids, too. We need informed adults and a climate of openness in our communities too. As painful as it is, it's tough to watch guys like Garrison Keillor, who I grew up listening to. When we see those individuals in a tough spot, those are difficult conversations to have. But I think that the openness that we're seeing, where people are willing to talk about and dialogue about these issues, is critical to our addressing these in our society.
So let me ask this question, because we've talked about this at length on our programs, and it does it because you mentioned the Garrison Keillor case. We could talk about any of the Matt Lauer case, any of these.
Yep.
That there are cases of assault and harassment.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not saying that one is more egregious than the other. However, we are once you start getting into kids. I mean, that's a different thing, right?
It
seems to me that we're kind of balling that together. I mean, I hear the Kevin Spacey case, the James Levine today, the conductor for the Met Opera. These are people who had relationships. Roy Moore as well had relationship with children,
mm-hmm.
and that is a. I mean, if you were to be charged on this, and by the way, I know we could do a whole other show on the statute of limitations.
Right. Yep.
Good God,
yeah,
but. If they are to be charged, those charges are very different in those cases.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely. So, but you're really right. I think that is a critical point, that sometimes these things kind of get intertwined because we start talking about one case and it leads to another case. But the issue of an act of sexual abuse against a child is very different than some of the workplace harassment kind of things that we're hearing about. However, at core, I would say, there is a common thread, and that is an issue of power and control. And
predatory behavior.
Predatory behavior, power and control. If I exert power and manipulate you to get certain things, then I get some satisfaction and gratification out of that. So there is a thread that runs through some of this stuff.
And it we see it. So when I asked you about prevention, and we talk about the conversations we have with the kids, what do we do about the predators, about the adults, to work with them to understand obviously they know it's not okay, but or do they? I don't understand. At what point do you address that side of the problem?
Well, a couple of things, and so here's another misconception that we end up tripping over a lot of times. So, There's a misconception that if somebody's abused as a child, they're going to grow up and be an abuser. That's not the case. There are certainly some instances of that, but that's not entirely the case. So that's a misnomer. The other thing that sometimes we forget about is that a very, very significant number of children who are abused sexually are abused by a peer. And so a lot of times we don't think about, well, what happened before we have a, 30-year-old man who's acting in this way. But a lot of kids who have been victimized end up having behaviors that start to show up in terms of their interaction with other kids sexually. And so one of the most successful places that I point to is that we need to strengthen those kind of programs that really are addressing how we help and support kids who may have had some experiences. And again, I'm right back to what's the best tool? Prevention is the best tool. So if we're talking with kids early about healthy sexual behavior, what is it to be like in a strong sexual relationship? Got to be age appropriate. So you and there's ways to do that. In fact, one of the things that I would say to people is there is a great booklet out there, Tony Cavanaugh Johnson, Understanding Children's Sexual Behavior. That is a booklet we would love to get out the door. Can I give our phone number?
You sure can.
Boy, if people are interested in that booklet, Understanding Children's Sexual Behaviors, 1-800-244-5373. If you call our office, we have a copy of that for you for free. That book outlines, how do you talk with kids about sexuality? It has some information in there about what are yellow flag, what are red flag behaviors that we should be watching for in people that are around our kids and our own kids. How do we know what's going on? How do we respond? And I think that's really critical. One of the things that we talked about briefly is this idea that people wait to report a sexual abuse instance until they're adults oftentimes. The research that's been done around that says that kids that disclose and are not believed wait literally years before they are willing to disclose again. So it's important we listen to kids. And this booklet is a place to find some of that information.
Links will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. Tim Hathaway is Executive Director of Prevent Child Abuse New York. Tim, thank you very much for being with us.
Yes,
great
thank
information.
You.
Thank you. Yep. Falling into Place is supported by the Seymour Fox Memorial Foundation. See more possibilities, see more promise, see more progress.